and turn it on. Yeah, where are you? Why aren't you listening? There we go. Okay, hey, we're ready. We're only 2 minutes late. Not bad.
My Christine.
Oh, wonderful. Now the other camera's not
working. C-H-R-I-S-T.
Just having one of those days.
What's your last name?
Franks. A-N-K-S. As in multiple Frankfurters.
Right. My husband's name is
my grandkids.
I try and remember names.
Their first trip abroad without Mom and Dad as well. So the last two were really funny.
You know, there are three people on the porch.
He was, I guess, 12, and he was driving him back. What's your big impression of Mexico?
Yes.
And he said, oh, he's a porter. That was okay. Then the next one, we have breakfast in a bar.
You walk into a restaurant.
I'm good. You're telling your folks they are great.
Just a breakfast.
Yeah. And I've taken some boxes where there's 12 or so people in the room, and they lead you through the, you know.
All right. Try this again.
And I got that 100%.
They have a brand new Airedale puppy.
Oh, boy.
So I was going to pick that up last week.
Oh, yeah.
See what you look for. Yeah.
She is so cute.
Do you have a picture?
No.
Oh. All right. Okay.
My neighbor's dog.
We're good. No color correction. I don't care.
He's an old guy.
Start. We're ready. I'm sorry. I'm a little behind schedule. It's been a crazy couple of days. I'm Scott Stimson, and this is the San Carlos Computer Club, and I'm happy to see you all here. We've got so many people. 23 people. There isn't enough. I don't have enough camera to get you all in the clip. So that's how many people are here. It's that, that it's gone beyond my scope of vision. A lot of stuff has happened. Some people were asking about the earthquake. A lot of you know I'm from Alaska. My folks are here with us as well, and they were giving us an update on their home. Mom, you were saying that dishes aren't a problem.
We have this one. We have a bed and breakfast. I don't know if Scott has told you.
Yes.
So in the wintertime, things all get stored in the shelves and the cupboards that we don't need. So in our... in one of the rooms, which we use sometimes as a dining room, there's all the glass and everything put in there. And on the walls, I have it decorated with my mother's dishes because they're kind of different. They aren't my most favorite, but they're hers.
They are.
Glasses fell and broke.
Oh.
Mother's dishes stay.
Okay.
Now, mother's dishes sit on
she
very narrow shelves because they're kind of laying up against the wall, and they are still there. It's rather stupid. Everything else in that room is pretty much on the floor,
oh,
broken.
So what did you learn?
Don't cross my mother.
No, no. Plastic works good.
Scott, I have a little report, too.
Okay.
Your sister and her husband went over to check out our house. They couldn't get into my office. My office is filled with books, and they said, if I would have been there, I would have been crushed.
Oh, wow.
So 8:30 in the morning, shelves came down, books came down, everything was piled up. They couldn't even open the door.
Oh, my goodness.
That, well, you would have been crushed, too, because
yes,
that's where Dad is at 8:30 in the morning. He's in his nook, a little office with shelves up to this full of books, mostly hardback books.
Did any of the books break?
I don't know that part yet.
They haven't got the door open yet.
I think they finally were able to shove it enough to take a picture of it. It's pretty devastated, that one.
I haven't actually talked to my folks about this, but I would imagine that a lot of the Alaskans feel very justified with the building codes that were in place after the 64 earthquake. Was there any building that fell down?
Not completely.
No.
The real damage was to roads.
Yeah.
Some roads. But we didn't hear about any buildings who were structurally damaged. Mm-hmm. Sandy and I hadn't moved up there in 64 when the major earthquake hit. And so they brought in real tight building codes and were essentially prepared for the next earthquake. And this really proved it with how the buildings, I mean, a lot of things came down inside, but the structure itself seemed to hold
on. Regulations.
There are 92 schools in the Anchorage School District, and they've all been inspected. A large number of my, I think I saw 60 of them need cleanup and repairs, but only one has been flagged that they can't go back in. And ironically, that was built in 61.
Which one is that? I didn't know that.
The Eagle Rivers Elementary School. Yeah. The kids can't go back to school in that building. They're going to have to do some real rebuilding, or they're going to have to reallocate something as a school.
I worked in San Francisco in a high rise, and they said that the building was kind of on rollers, so it would move with the earthquake.
Oh, wow.
So the 64 earthquake originally was an 8.6, I think they said. And then when they did a whole revamping of the sensors and that sort of thing, they reassigned it a number of 9.2. Wow. So our building codes are good for an 8.6. Yeah. You might want to ask when you're in Alaska and you're going into is this an 8.6 or a 9.2? The larger number.
Was that the same time that Homer had that one? Or
it's all the same.
All the
you
same.
Talk about earthquake, that's Alaska's earthquake in 1964.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then it also depends on how long it lasts. Some of them are just quick, and then others roll and keep going.
Yeah, no, they're having lots of aftershocks with this one.
I think I read 1,000 so far.
Wow. Yeah, over 1,000. Yeah.
It's not unusual to have 1,000 earthquakes in a month or even a week, but most of them.
There's a close relationship between building codes and security that we've talked about right here. There's a lot of buildings that have been built and that are rigid, and they fall apart. And what makes them rigid is all the steel inside. And all tall buildings are steel buildings. There's no concrete buildings. And so, like you were talking about, building on rollers.
Yeah.
I've actually experienced when Mount St. Helens blew, our floor rolled.
Yeah.
Wow.
It rolled. The wood floor. It rolled and it came right back to where it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's scale.
Nails work pretty good for earthquake zones.
Yeah. Well, I've definitely been in an earthquake where I felt all 360 degrees of motion underneath me. And I've been in an earthquake where I've seen
vertical.
Yeah, I've seen the vertical move up and down my line of sight, but I've never experienced anything like our friends and family have experienced, and this ongoing aftershocks. Everybody's got to be their psyche's got to be shot by now.
Well, we did a hospital in Portland, Oregon, that's sitting on the San Andreas Fault, and it's 12, 13 stories, and one day it's going to go down.
Oh, because of the way it's constructed.
And nobody knew it.
Well, we're happy that nobody's hurt. I haven't even heard of pets dying. I haven't heard of anything like that. It's just roads. We've been cut off to the north.
It's his fault.
Scott, one other story is we've just transitioned. Our two governors, our new governor came.
No.
And it hasn't been a very harmonious transition.
Some of us aren't happy.
And so the two guys were sitting at a table starting their negotiations for the transition with the earthquake.
They were in the plans for
both
someday.
Both being very adversarial. In a couple of minutes, they were under the table kind of hugging each other.
Well, it wasn't the joke going around the internet that, Alaska doesn't want to see Walker leave either. Well, outside of the earthquake in Alaska, and I thought I was ready to move my websites over to another space, and yesterday I found out I was not. So I have been frantically trying to recover from that, and still the San Carlos Computer Club website is offline. So there was no post this morning about today's meeting. This meeting still will be recorded, and it'll still be out on YouTube. And if you're on YouTube now, you could be watching us right this moment, but it's the blog that's offline right now. Everything else seems to have, but I've been a little frazzled just in the last 24 hours dealing with that problem. And And I've brought topics. I do have topics, but I collected them last week and then didn't what I do, my process is through the week, I pick up things I think you guys will find interesting, and then I refresh all that in the morning before our meeting. Well, the morning before our meeting, I am frantically trying to get the blog back online, and so I didn't get to refresh my topics. So I'm happy to entertain any questions or topics people would like to bring. Yes?
Okay, so last week you talked about Epic Browser.
Yes. The Epic Browser, which has a built-in VPN for free.
And she tried it.
I love
it. So I decided I would go online.
Epic.
You really liked it?
Epic.
Oh, Epic. I read all about it. And Epic Browser, it said, was developed by India by a search for Windows and OS X.
Okay. And I think somebody discovered that there's a version for iOS. Did you find a version for iOS?
Yeah, there is
for
iOS and Android.
Android, okay.
However, when I went to look, it's from a different developer.
It's a scam license.
So my question is, how do I know if it's going to have the same features,
right,
or is it somebody else's idea?
I couldn't.
Yeah, that's
on my devices.
Okay, so you didn't find an iOS version you could use, and you found an Android version, and it makes sense that it could easily be from a different developer, because it's an open source project. Chromium is the name of it. It's actually what the Chrome browser is based on. It's its core open source foundation is Chromium, and then they proprietarize the user experience, and they call that Chrome. They integrate Chrome with Google services. So you have access to Google Drive and Google Docs and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And Chrome just makes it better as far as Google's concerned. So Chromium is the foundation that's available to any developer to build a browser out of. Epic Browser built their browser using that as a foundation. I don't think there's any way to know unless the other developer is saying that we're doing the same things with this development.
I couldn't find anything because I went and tried to say, you know, is Epic Browser for Android the same as the original Epic Browser, and then probably the internet might not be the right title.
Well, yeah, I think that you're probably going to find yourself in discussion groups, finding people talking about that developer's browser and talking about the key features.
Yeah, I mean, when you go and look, it still says it has some of the same features, but it's hard to know. I thought, you know, I don't know if there's one out there and somebody's still
collecting
all my data and everything and
calling
every browser.
So. Well, and there is some sense of security you could get from it being in the Google Play Store. In a perfect world, Google will have vetted it and decided that it wasn't something harmful. But in the past, even though that's the way that's supposed to work, they've been spoofed before. And they've been spoofed at like 1,000 times what the Apple Store is. The Google Play Store has been spoofed thousands of times. The Apple Store has only been spoofed 100 times. And they turned something off, and all that spoofing in the Apple Store went away. Seriously, if security was your biggest concern, the Apple products make the most sense right now. Because you cannot get something malicious on that product for any more than a moment. And the moment that Apple's aware of it, that can no longer happen. And that's just not the case in an Android world. There's so many different ways to compromise something. It's very similar to Windows in that respect.
Who's watching Android then?
Say again?
Who's watching Android?
Who's using Android, you mean?
Who's watching? like you say,
who's vetting apps?
Oh, like I said, it would be Google. Google's really? Play Store team is supposed to be vetting those apps, but they've proven to not be able to keep up with it. They've proven that there's a good chance that there could be something malicious in their store. The Microsoft Store is the same way. You got to be very careful what you're downloading in the store because there's just so many things that have been spoofed. And there's no laws or regulations that say you can't take something like the VLC code base, which is completely open source. I could take it. I could add something to it, a front end. I could call it Scott's VLC player. I could even be more obscure than that. I could say the VLC player to end all players. And I could put it in the store, and legitimately I could put it in the store, and you could legitimately find it and download it and use it. And it's not the VLC you were looking for. It's not the media player that you went searching for. It's my own Frankenstein version of it that you've ended up with. So that happens all the time, and those are questionably legitimate apps because many times they're putting advertising into a platform that didn't have advertising before so that they can monetize your use of you using that app, and you're using it under the thinking that you've downloaded this app that you've used before, but why has it got advertising now? And yeah. It's got advertising because it's not the app you used before. It's the one I put in the store so I can make money off of advertising. All aspects of the app may work just fine, but there's this little portion of advertising that was added to it that you don't necessarily need to have because you could have gone and gotten the original yeah. application without it. Yeah. I'm sorry for coming around in circles to get to that point, but but that's what's going on. In the Apple world, all of that's controlled in the Apple world. Apple actually has an advertising platform. So there isn't like just sticking advertising into an app. You actually have to sign up for their advertising platform, which allows you to introduce advertisements in your apps. Everything from inception all the way to publication to collection, all of that's collected by Apple. Adding another layer of security to it just because it's all controlled. I woke up with a sniffle this morning.
Oh, good.
Oh, great.
I'm hoping it's allergies. Don't touch me.
Don't worry.
Ray, you
yeah.
And now you're broadcasting.
That's right. Yes, Bob.
You are going to have a class, and when is it on cell phones? I am interested in that, and I would hope that maybe this group, you might give us a little bit of a preview so that we look good when we come to the class.
Well, Ray got me involved in this, so I'll blame her.
No, Jan Rains.
Yeah, and Jane.
I'm just a middleman.
Jan and Ray. Well, when I talked to her, she said, you're going to send me the list of questions.
Oh, she did?
Yeah.
Okay.
And she also said you were the one to talk to about the promotion of it.
Yeah, I'll do the flyers up. You just give me the details.
Okay. I'd like to have my business's logo on it, that's all.
Okay.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be
big. I need
big.
A copy of it.
Oh, yeah. I'll get the girls to send you a copy. Sony's got all that. So it's supposed to be January 10th at 7 p.m. at Club Deportivo. And the concept behind this has been a cell phone class for dummies. Mm-hmm. And the idea is to keep it really dumbed down to the basic questions.
That's one of our educational series that she's putting
yes.
on now.
Yeah.
Yeah, this week they're having one on birdies.
On birdies.
That's dummies. In fact, I got it. In our
Birding
dummies book, I'm copying.
Sound like you're a hair away from earthing.
Right.
Earthing for dummies.
Okay.
She wants
a preview.
To start with.
Give us an idea.
Well, no, I mean, the idea is that I'll start from material that is a list of questions that people are asking commonly. And so we'll probably be things like, what's the difference between a locked phone and an unlocked phone?
Good.
Right? Well, what do they mean when they say dual SIMs? What's 4G, 3G, 5G?
I think you're beyond what they want.
I'm waiting for my list of questions to, and I will flush out the material
my
from it.
My question is, how do you hang up?
Swipe
that red button, it's still ringing.
Right?
Push that, the side button.
Plug into the
yeah,
that'll do it. Yeah.
What I can say is that if it's an Android phone, it reliably hangs up when you hit the red button at least 80% of the time.
Yeah, but you have to do it 80 times.
Yeah, well, that's in that 20, that ish percentage, that 20-ish percentage, where you keep hitting the button and it won't shut off. I've recently had an odd cell phone problem. I'm attributing it to these headsets, though. I cannot quite. It answers itself. If anybody's called me the last few weeks, they may have been talking to my pocket because
I keep. I think it's too much information.
I keep.
Wait a minute.
My friends and family keep saying, "You keep answering the phone, but we can't understand what you're saying."
Oh, the image.
Well, and actually, I did say you were talking to my pocket, and that's really disturbing when you think that there's another push for putting smells on the internet. There's visuals and smells there. You're probably not interested.
But can't you set your phone up to automatically answer?
Well, you can under certain circumstances.
Well, my like husband's an answering painting machine? And stuff, and you know he can't use his hands to get. There are times, or when we're driving down from Nogales, and I'm in a car and he's in a car, and it's hard for him to get to his phone and answer it. So I'd like to set it up.
Car doesn't answer.
No, not it's an old car. My car at home does.
I think that's a really good point, and there are like a half a dozen situations that you can configure your Android device to answer automatically. And it includes things like when it's connected to the car, should it answer automatically? And when it's connected to some Bluetooth device, like a pair of headsets, should it answer automatically? And I went through all that. I couldn't find anything that related to what was going on. And I'm thinking it's a hardware problem. I'm thinking there's something that, because I can't find a software setting for it.
When you get done with that subject, I'd like to digress a minute.
Sure. I don't think we're formally focusing on anything at the moment. So go right ahead. What do you want to talk about?
Okay. Back to Epic.
Epic browser.
I use a program called LastPass.
Yes.
Because I'm a dummy
it work
and I
with?
Don't remember 65 different passwords.
Hey, I've been using LastPass. The more I use it, the more I love it. The other day I needed a password. I was sitting in front of it going, where's my password? Oh, I've got LastPass on my phone. I pull up the app, ask for my fingerprint to authorize me. I get in. There's a list of all my passwords right there. I pull up the site. I look at the password. I can type it in. It's no different than the black book a lot of you are carrying around, except for it's right there in my phone.
And it goes from one device to the next device, and you can pull it up on your phone when you've got it on.
Now, I just get more and more impressed with using LastPass.
My problem is I can get LastPass works on Chrome. LastPass works on Opera. It works on
If it Safari. Works on Chrome, it's supposed to work on Epic.
It doesn't.
Does Epic have anything written about it?
Yes. Not that I've found.
Oh, you found something?
It said
that
they, was on the Android thing, I think. It said that it
supported LastPass. Well, on Android, it would be a little bit of a different deal. I don't think it would be a plug-in under Android. I think it's actually the app that runs. And
that might be, I don't know.
Yeah, I think the... I mean, I'd actually have to look into it. But I don't think we have a plug-in for LastPass. I think you run it as a...
What's a plug-in?
It's a feature that's added to a browser. Or a piece of... plug-in is a very general topic. A plug-in is referring to features that can be added as extensions to a piece of software. In a browser, it's very specifically adding features to that browser. I heard about a plug-in that would be a good example. I wish I could remember the name of it now. Because what it was doing was it was blocking ads, and it was allowing you to...
Ghost. No. Ghosty or something like that.
I'm trying to remember the feature. I can't remember the feature either. I'll bring it. I thought it was a great example, and I can't remember what it was now. I should have written it down. I heard it this morning.
Accessibility. That comes with age.
I'm getting older.
Plug-in. So can I go out on the internet and find various
additional
features that I want, and then add them to the?
That's right. That's right. And when you go to add LastPass to your Chrome browser in your Windows or Macintosh computer, it would point you directly to, I think Chrome calls them extensions.
Extensions.
And they have like an app store for that stuff. And so if you go to LastPass and you fill all that out, it points you to where to download the plugin for your web browser.
I would like to ask a question. If you use LastPass, what's the chance of being hacked? And everybody's got your passwords.
Yeah, so this is an interesting issue because you have one point of security from your perspective. You have one password that opens them all. And you have to decide how secure you want to leave that. Like, for example, on my phone, you can't get into LastPass without a fingerprint or an actual password. On my laptop, it's the same thing. You have to physically type in the password. On a desktop computer locked in my house, I've got it saved out of convenience so that I can just sit down and have my passwords right there. But on my mobile devices, because this could be just stolen off the table, then you have to have that LastPass password to get access to all those passwords. Does that help answer your question?
Yeah, and so if you were to do a password, what would you know, we talk about six numerals or six characters. Is six enough?
Well,
what would you do to make your password really secure?
Yeah, I mean, I would follow some of those standards that are upper, lowercase, special symbols, adding special symbols when you can is a great way to add a lot of, I was going to say entropy because you have to go through. As soon as you add a special, when you're just dealing with letters, then to hack a password, you're dealing with a character set that's 26 in size. It's the alphabet. Mm-hmm. It's actually bigger than that. It's 52 because it's upper or lower case. You add numbers, that's another 10 digits. But if you add a special character, then there is a whole slew of ASCII that a password cracker has to go through. Hundreds and hundreds of additional character combinations that have to, just because you added a period, or just because you added an ampersand.
If you ask LastPass to generate your password, then it's just complete gobbledygook, and you know it might be 25 characters long.
That's right.
And uncrackable.
Right, and in some circumstances, that could be very frustrating.
But I think what he's getting at is, how safe is the company? Do they have a team of crackers that are testing the system all the time, all the time, all the time, using new techniques so that nobody can break in?
Yeah, absolutely. That's the way those companies roll. But what's important about LastPass is its foundation. It was originally bought, it was a privately owned company, and they had already laid the foundation for the technology. And that was encryption up and down, so that when your password list is in transit to you, that's all encrypted. It's stored on their servers encrypted, so that means that they can't look in their server to see your passwords. Only you can look in their servers to see your passwords.
Is it free or is it not free?
It's free. Well, it's freemium. So they've got a free offering, which has been all I've needed so far. But there are features that I haven't taken advantage yet that are premium features, and we've talked about some of them here. One of them is the ability to assign a next of kin. And that's something that you would pay a monthly fee for, which I think is very valuable given this crowd. It would be nice if a spouse or a grandchild had the ability to get into your accounts after you've passed away, right? And so they've got a really unique system where you can assign a next of kin email, and that next of kin can request access, and LastPass will try and get a response from you. And if your dead body can't provide a response after a specific period of time, then it will send access to your next of kin. And that's very powerful.
Do they use your passwords, or do they make up new ones for you each time you enter a site?
Either or. In fact, it keeps yelling at me about one of my passwords because I have refused to change it, and it doesn't think I'm secure.
It doesn't like duplicates.
Yeah, it doesn't like duplicates. It classifies those as unsecure passwords, so you've already been using these somewhere.
Wow.
But there's always that button right there to generate a password. And I'll tell you, that's been the nicest thing, because I end up having to sign up for so many trivial things. I am checking them out for people. And I don't care about the service, but I still got to create an account, come up with a password. I'm scratching my head. I don't even scratch anymore. I just hit generate password. If I care about it, it's going to be in the list. If I don't care about it, it doesn't matter. It just disappears.
Have you compared LastPass with Dashlane?
No, I'm not familiar with it.
Anybody have any experience with Dashlane?
Dashlane.
Yeah.
I'm going to write it down.
It's just on,
what did you say it is? Dashlane?
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 Dashlane.
This is LastPass.
I haven't really started it, but I was looking at it, and then it seemed to me like I came across some news that they had actually been hacked.
Oh, interesting.
Scratch that.
Yes, scratch that.
Think about it.
Cross it
that
out.
That may not be accurate in terms of the hacking.
I tried Dashlane, and then I tried LastPass, and found LastPass was much better.
You have Dashlane experience.
Yeah, I tried it, 3 or 4 months. And
what made you pick LastPass over it?
Something I read on, PC Mag or one of those.
So it wasn't that it was easier to use or had different features. It was just somebody said that it was a better. They vouched for it better than they did Dashlane.
Better product, and it was one of the, PC Mag or one of the, big companies that do the stuff on it. And I've had very good luck with LastPass.
Yeah.
I'll sit there and get angry at it once in a while, and that's because, you put in, you're looking for First Bank or something. I have 3 accounts on at one union.
Yeah.
And I put the same password on all 3. I'm not dummy, it's easier that way.
Is it yelling at you, though? It doesn't like it.
It doesn't like that because I've repeated the password.
That's one of the neat features on LastPass is that when you install the plugin, you've got this icon up in your browser bar, and when you approach these services that you're using with security, it'll flag you if it's got a password for it. It'll flag you if it thinks your password sucks. It'll say this isn't a secure password, but it will allow you to go through it and go ahead and keep going. One of my frustrations is that I host a number of websites. Like I was saying, I've got them all under the same service, but I log in with different usernames and different passwords. And so what LastPass does is it presents me with like 4 different logins for the same service, and I have to be careful to remember which one I'm trying to log in with, or I'll be looking at the wrong. I'll be looking at my business site when I'm supposed to be looking at the computer club site. Those kinds of discrepancies are just little headaches, but they've really worked out so much more of this stuff.
So in LastPass, does it give you a list of your sites and then the password next to it so that you can locate it easily?
Well, let's say I want to get First Bank. I type in, it has a search up on the thing, or I get onto First Bank's website, and it comes up and it puts a little box with 3 dots up next to you know, what do you want to sign in?
Because you've already put that in it.
Yes.
That's right.
Okay. And you sit and hit that, and it comes up and says, you know, Falderall or whatever.
Okay.
And puts in the password. Or you can set it up so that you have to ask it for, you know, you put Falderall in, and then it comes back, and you have to ask for the password. Or it'll automatically put the password in.
Okay.
You know, your option. It's a very good product.
Sounds like
probably
it.
Probably
better than my list.
Yeah. At this point, yes.
It's got a form code.
Does it work with your same thing?
It does. Yeah, I've got a fingerprint reader on my phone, mm-hmm. and so it asks me to either type in the password or I can use the fingerprint to authorize it. Mm-hmm. And it literally pulls up a list of all my sites, and I've taken the time to organize them. Some of them it knows automatically, like if you save a Facebook password, it'll put it in a category called social. Mm-hmm. But it may not know, like it seems like it didn't know, I don't know why it wouldn't know, but it didn't put Twitter in social. That's where I expect it to be, so I put the Twitter in social.
It should be political.
All right, so I can go to the social category if I'm looking for that password.
Yeah, fake news.
Whatever.
I mean, I think what it's got is it's got a learning curve at the beginning.
Yeah.
And so when you first install it, you're confused and you're not sure you're doing it right, and there's stuff happening and you're not sure you're filling that stuff out right. And I would say just plod along with it, because the features become maybe not obvious, but you start running into circumstances where it's working for you instead of you having to learn how to do it. And so I think the deeper you get into it, the easier it is to take advantage of.
It automatically pulls up passwords that you've got saved, like in Safari.
Right, in your browser.
It pulls that in when you initially put the stuff in there.
Wow.
You know, so you don't have to sit there and...
Oh, it knows everything.
So I went back and forth with that. I thought that was great. I thought if you went to a website that you normally had the password saved in your browser, like I'm using Chrome and I go to Facebook and it's already got my Facebook password there. Now I've installed LastPass. It sees that I'm at Facebook. It sees the username and password that's been saved in the browser. And when I log in, it says, do you want to add this to LastPass? And so I don't have to fill any of that out. I just say, yes, add it to LastPass. Now, any place that I might sign into LastPass, I have that password available to me. The reason I say I went back and forth on that feature is I would kind of like to set LastPass loose on my password saved file. The file that keeps track, like in Chrome, there's a file that keeps track of all your passwords. They're encrypted, but they're right there. Why isn't there a feature to just say, go suck all those passwords out of Chrome, put them into LastPass?
It did it with Safari for me.
But it did it one by one.
No.
It did it with every...
When I first put it on there, it sat there and went, and then they're all there.
I haven't had that experience yet. But I haven't used Safari. I've used Chrome, Firefox...
Epic?
Not Epic.
Opera.
Chrome, Firefox, Opera. I guess I'm not using it. Am I using it with Internet
I'm
Explorer?
Using
or with Edge?
From McAfee.
And Edge. And Microsoft Edge.
Edge.
Yeah.
That's very intuitive.
It's got a form filler, too.
A form filler?
Yeah. You know, so...
You know, oh, yeah.
It's for setting up an account, it'll put all your information in the form.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It'll also sit there and hold... account numbers, credit card numbers.
See, that's the other thing that's great, is that kind of information people were storing in their browser, a specific browser, and then they'd end up on a different computer or a different browser, none of that information would be available to them. Now, if you stick with Chrome, Google has worked that out by synchronizing Chrome with your Gmail accounts. So you can sign into Chrome on this computer and have access to everything that you are signed in on that computer. But you're still stuck on that Chrome platform. You can't.
But you have the cloud, too, don't you? If you have all this stuff in the cloud?
That's what we're talking about. All of this we're talking about is cloud.
Okay.
And so it doesn't address the issue of what if I want to use a different browser? What if the website I want to go to doesn't work right under Chrome, but I know it works right under Firefox? Well, then you got to bring all that information over to Firefox. With LastPass, you just install the plugin, and everything in LastPass is now available. That new browser, that new platform, that new mobile device, whatever it might be, you add LastPass, and now you have access to all that stuff. And it is. It's notes. I've started using it for saving secure notes, like my kids' social security numbers. I need a safe place to put those that are easy to get access to for me. And the LastPass lets you make these generic notes that are encrypted. But they also have allowances for specifically credit card information, address information. All of it's under the same encryption. There's no reason to think. I mean, there is a reason to think. You are, anytime you're out there, regardless of how encrypted it is. And I think I mentioned last week that the NSA has made it very clear if it's encrypted, they're keeping it indefinitely. Right? If you made no efforts to encrypt your data, they only hang on to it for 6 months before they destroy it. But if you encrypt it, you're basically setting up a red flag saying, hang on to this, use this for teaching encryption and thwarting encryption attempts.
If you tunnel, is that considered encryption?
Yep, it is. If you're using a VPN and they're capturing VPN traffic, it's an example of something they will hold on to until they can figure out how to break
it. Yeah, like all the time I get the... are you a robot?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's funny.
Once in a while it doesn't work. If the thing doesn't work, then you go around.
Robot is a cute way of referring to bots, which stems from robot.
Yeah.
The idea being that your CAPTCHA is trying to distinguish you as a person from a program that might be doing it automatically.
Yeah.
The frustration is that in this day and age, the programs are smarter than us. And they can typically mimic a human better than a human can. They can see and read the pictures better. They can see and read the CAPTCHAs better. So it's kind of left over from a different time period. One of the neat things that's going on right now is that the CAPTCHAs have gotten intelligent enough that when you click the I'm not a robot, it takes in all these browser characteristics that are available that you are, that you're... what you're kind of allowing out there in the world. When you go to a website, there are things like what font you're using, what screen size you're using, where your cursor's placed at, how your cursor moves. That's all public information to that website. And it uses that to profile you and make that determination. So a lot of websites now, you don't have to pick a picture of where are the streetlights or are these old cars. You hit I am a robot and you wait a few – I'm not a robot and you wait a few seconds. And it checks all that and goes, well, these are all the characteristics of a human. That are presented, so you must be a human.
Yeah.
I don't like the one where you have to type it in because I can't read.
Right? I've only run into that a couple of times where I literally couldn't read the CAPTCHA.
It's difficult sometimes.
Have you hit the speaker to have it read to you?
I have done that and wrote it down while they were speaking.
Well, the speaking's hard too because it's like listening to a number station. They.
How many passwords do you have?
Me?
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea. Way too many.
50? 100?
Sure. Yeah, probably.
I've got
200 or more. I've probably got 50 passwords that I would have to go and ask and say I forgot my password because I didn't get it written down. I've probably got 50 of those passwords.
I think we forget that passwords are really important. We went to San Antonio last week, and we did Airbnb. And I didn't know what the Airbnb password was. My daughter, who is very computer literate, she tried to find out. We could not get in the door. We went into the house next door, and the security was the same for all three houses. And we finally got in. And then we tried to order toilet paper because it didn't have any. And we didn't have a password.
First off, how much was the toilet paper?
We did finally go out and we bought the toilet paper. And there wasn't
Airbnb.
From
your Airbnb host.
Yes.
How much did it cost?
No. Well, they finally brought it the day we left. A week later,
Wonderful.
Wonderful.
And the corkscrew, they didn't know corkscrew. and we wanted a corkscrew. So,
gosh, I probably would have had to get my money back.
I know.
Yeah. We bought our old corkscrew.
I travel with two corkscrews.
Let me say right now, you will find our bed and breakfast on Airbnb.
Really?
Yeah. But we're a bed and breakfast. You're going to have an awesome Airbnb experience if you come to our bed and breakfast.
Well, this was a new Airbnb.
Get a free earthquake and everything.
That's right. Yeah. Earthquake damage in every room. No, it's just, you know, we felt like we went through a season there where we had really dropped and we really attributed to not being part of Airbnb. And so yeah. I really scrambled and got us on Airbnb. And it was touch and go through that season because we didn't have any reviews. Nobody had any experience with us. And then immediately after we had some reviews, Airbnb is one of our big contributors to our bookings. People come to us all the time now.
Well, this is really bad.
What is Scott, Airbnb? I wanted to say something on that. For those of you that haven't used Airbnb, after Scott decided we should get involved, Sandy and I were taking a trip driving down from Portland to Arizona, and I committed to use Airbnb the whole way. Huh. We did it the first night, had miserable experiences from then on. Scott explained to me that we are not target audience.
Well, just like the toilet paper thing, that's amazing. Like, did you get a great price on the room?
No, it was about, there were about five different ones that were the same price. It was a great interior. The exterior was in shambles. Mm-hmm. He was working on it, and he was a brand new guy.
How much?
So I learned that, huh?
How much?
$75 a night. Okay. And there were four of us. We had three bedrooms, one bath, a nice kitchen, and the exterior was being worked on. The interior was being worked on.
Yeah.
The guy was brand new. He didn't have any reviews.
Hmm. Yeah. I really feel like the Airbnb really attracts millennials. It attracts people that are strapped for cash, and they still want to travel, and they still need accommodations. They don't know where they're going to stay until they show up in their location, and they're going to look around, and they're shopping specifically on price. And they're the kind of people that show up and see no toilet paper and run out and get toilet paper, write a bad review, and ask for some of their money back.
What do they charge for Airbnb?
Yeah. Yeah, not for toilet paper, but I'll tell you, I had a young guy show up. He did not want to deal with me in person. I mean, I was there ready to help, and he was just annoyed that he had to deal with me. He just, yeah, he was really like, it's an app. I don't want to see anybody. But we're a bed and breakfast, so we're used to hosting people. We're used to greeting them and telling them what we're all about, helping them with information about the town. And it was obvious from the moment I met him, he was really didn't like the idea that there was somebody up in his bed. He just wanted a place to stay the night. And unfortunately, he had not locked his room that evening, and we had a guest checking in late that got confused and walked into his room. And I sleep like a log. I wake up at 5 in the morning. I got a whole slew of emails from this young guy from Airbnb going, this is just not acceptable. This is inappropriate. Your door doesn't lock. You gave my key to another guest. I mean, none of it was true, right? It was just all these assumptions that were being made in the middle of the night because he didn't lock his door and a guest inadvertently walked in. But I ended up giving him back his money for that first night because it's just not worth it. It's just, I mean, he had time to see that it was his issue. It wasn't our issue. And the only thing that he could say about us is we gave him his money back. On that note, I wonder if you guys have recognized that Apple has started giving refunds to people that have done dumb stuff on the Apple Store.
Yes.
Apple, in the same light as me giving that guy back his money, because it's just not worth that kind of story being out there, Apple has, like, you have kids, grandkids that have bought stuff, you've inadvertently bought an app. Apple's been refunding that money to people, even though it's their fault, even though they're the one that authorized the password that makes it possible for something to be purchased on their device. It wasn't a hacker, it wasn't maliciousware, it was inadvertent purchasing on your Apple device, but Apple wants people to feel like they've got so much protection that they've been giving back that money, even though you're the one that made the mistake. It wasn't Apple that made the mistake. It wasn't the app designer that tricked you into it. It's just you not being aware of what you're doing. Apple's giving you back your money for that.
Sometimes Amazon will do that too.
Oh, Amazon does it all the time. Yeah. Amazon's amazing in that way. When we first put Amazon on my kids' tablets for some games, they immediately, inadvertently, made a bunch of purchases. And I got Amazon on the phone. I'm like, hey, where's your parental controls? I set the parental controls. They're like, oops, that doesn't work. And they just took it all off of my bill.
Good.
Yeah. No, and it really is. It's having more money than time. And actually, I think you have to worry about this in any of these new services. They typically have more money than time. They're typically backed by venture capitalism. And what they want is they want good stories about what they're doing until they can get it all together.
They want the long term.
They want to still be here right. A year from now.
That's right.
And so they're ready. I don't think Uber... I think Uber's still not making money. Hmm. I mean, I think it's still... Every ride of Uber is financed by venture capitalists. It took forever for Amazon to make any money.
Sure.
I think it was just like within the last five or six years they've actually showed a profit. Before it was all losses.
What I think is what's interesting is you're right. Millennials are using this.
Yeah,
they're using Uber. They're using and old people like us. We're wannabes.
Hey, I use Uber all the time.
Huh?
So use Uber?
Uber
a lot.
Yeah. Well, yeah. If you
come,
yeah.
What?
I think we all are. We're still here. It's the new millennium, and we're still here.
But it's hard to figure out.
No, it's not. You put an app on your phone.
I know.
Well, in certain ways, it very much is.
The price of what you pay for a cab.
Yeah, but one thing is, we travel for the last 30 years. And we always worry about a taxi showing up. Since Uber, we started using Uber
right away.
It's much cheaper. I can see where the driver is. I can see him on the
exactly.
And took all the anxiety of not making the airplane. And yep, so that saved us an hour.
Yeah.
We didn't have to plan an extra hour ahead just in case.
Well, I think that the last time I read about it, every ride you take with Uber is subsidized by VC money. Because they can't afford to pay their driver and the gas. They can't with what you are charged, they can't afford to give.
But they're not paying their driver. These are all private contracts.
Yeah, it's all private.
Right. Yeah. They are paying their driver. That's the point. Is that if you work for Uber, you get paid from the app.
Right.
Yeah.
The money that goes into the app, there's like 30% of that money is from venture capital. It's from this stockpile of money that the investors have put into that organization because they're waiting for the payoff.
Right.
And up till recently, their payoff has been self-driving cars. They've been hoping to eliminate the driver from the equation, and then they're going to start seeing profits from it.
70% of the fare stays within the driver.
70% of the fare is from your pocket. Right. So what they're paying out in Uber, 70% of that comes from you. The other 30% comes from the investors.
Right.
They're taking a loss. They're taking a 30% loss.
They're subsidizing. Who gets that 30%?
It's to pay expenses.
They're subsidizing.
That's right. That's absolutely what they're doing. They're subsidizing Uber because they see a future payoff for it.
Right.
I mean, startups have been doing this ever since Silicon Valley started. I don't know if you guys have ever watched the HBO show Silicon Valley. But one of the last episodes that I saw was excellent because they were making fun of something that was literally done in Silicon Valley. They had a pizza app, right? They had a pizza app where you could just press a button and get a pizza, and it was the best price in town. And what the company was, they just wrote some interface, right, and released it in an app store, and now you have a pizza app. What they were doing on the back end is they were ordering the pizza from some pizza company, sticking it in their pizza box, and delivering it with their delivery people. Mm-hmm. And they were covering the cost of the pizza and the drivers, and they were taking a loss because they had so much money up front they could take a loss until they could put together their own pizza production company.
Right.
Yeah. And in this episode of Silicon Valley, this other startup needed their design talent. that had been scooped up via, out of some other acquisition. And so he took his venture capitalism and bought so many pizzas that they couldn't stay in business because they didn't have enough startup money. And so he inherited all their talent. Well, that crap is going on all the time right now.
Wow.
It's just piles of money financing a future endeavor. So I don't know how we got on that, but
I saw that you cannot buy a Roku in Mexico.
You can now.
So they fixed that.
They have fixed it. Yeah. In fact,
could I hear that again?
Rokus are available in Mexico for sale.
Not at Walmart.
Well, they are on Amazon.
Yeah, and I have one. I just need to get it to work.
Yeah, they have. You remember?
I don't have a good Wi-Fi connection.
You remember last year there was an injunction against them and they couldn't be sold. There was the injunction because there was a question of piracy that Televisa had put a suit against Roku because their platform encourages piratism, pirating. That happened a couple of years ago. A year and a half ago? I can't remember the timeline now. But the second to last thing that happened was a judge... the original injunction said, we're going to figure out if this is piracy. I'm going to talk in Scott language. We're going to find out if this is piracy. While we're figuring that out, you can sell your product. Last January, I think it was last January, a judge said, no, you're not allowed to sell your product until we figure out it's piracy, whether it's piracy or not, which is a very unusual move for Mexico. That's not the way they typically do things. Then, just recently, like the beginning of the summer or middle of the summer, the whole thing was thrown out because they determined it wasn't privacy. It wasn't piracy. Their product wasn't a whatever legal terms it needs to be. And they're allowed to distribute and sell products and Roku services here in Mexico again.
Another question though, related to that. If you have an Amazon account in the States, is it good in Mexico?
No, it is.
No.
To an extent.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are your Amazon Prime account is not available in Mexico, but there is a Mexican Prime account you can subscribe to.
But you can
obtusely, obtusely following up on Bob's toilet paper story.
Yeah,
I found a back door to Amazon Prime down in Mexico with an American credit card.
Yeah.
Last week I ordered on regular Amazon necklace.
That's right.
I didn't bring it today, but a necklace and I. Ordered with my American credit card.
Right.
It came through yesterday, and then I got a notice that, you should think about Prime. So I started filling out the application again, and it said, we're going to use your credit card, blah, 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 from the United States.
But that was for Mexican Prime specifically.
Mexican Prime specifically.
Okay.
Was now going to use my American credit card.
Ooh. So that's kind of...
On Friday, I may have a very large package of Charmin showing up.
When Prime first became available in Mexico, I went to sign up for it through the Amazon.mx account using my regular Amazon account. And it told me I needed a Mexican payment method.
Yeah.
And so I gave it at the time a debit card because I have a Mexican debit card.
So Linda just did the same thing a couple of weeks ago.
Well, and then I immediately went in and paid for everything with my American card and took my debit card out.
Yeah. And Linda did the same thing. She went out and got a credit card, which is a hassle. I
mean, yeah.
And so I didn't want to do that. So this other way worked.
Well, and if
do I have to have a Mexican credit card to use a Mexican Amazon?
No,
not to use it. But when they were first starting up Prime in Mexico, you needed a Mexican payment method to verify that you're eligible for Prime in Mexico.
But you can buy something from Amazon without Prime with your American credit card on Mexico.
You mean with Mexico as your shipping address?
Amazon Mexico, with your address here, buy something with American credit card. Once it goes through and they see it's okay, they probably are going to offer you to get into Prime with that same card.
Is the Prime worth it in Mexico?
I don't know.
It's half the price of Prime in the United States.
How much?
40 a year.
The Prime in Mexico, I use it all the time. It's just not... it doesn't affect as many items in the catalog.
Yeah.
There's a far greater number of things that don't support Prime in the Mexican catalog than there is in the American catalog.
I just wonder if it's worth it.
But that could be like Netflix and how it got better over time.
It has gotten better over time. In fact, I was gonna cap this off with my experience. I just bought a drive cable for a MacBook Pro mid 2012. I mean, like a MacBook Pro that's 6-7 years old. Their drive cable is very unique, very available in the United States, not so available in Mexico. But I was able to find it on American Amazon and ship it to my Mexican address.
Oh, really?
It cost me $3, well, $3.50 to ship it because I wasn't able to take advantage of Prime. But they told me it wouldn't be here until the 7th, and I got it on the 1st.
I got my drive too.
Does Amazon deliver here to your physical address?
Yes.
Now? Yeah.
Yes.
You better have a
I
really
use my
address.
Office.
You better have a really good address.
Yeah. Your address is probably pretty good because it's right off the main road there.
But I went and got my water bill, my electric bill, and just like merged them. You know, the address is as long as this table. Yeah. It got there. The guy showed up.
I use my offices because we've got somebody there 9 to 5, and it's very easy to find.
Isn't it best to use your lot number within a sector, like lot number 26 in Preston sector?
Yeah, it has to be written correctly. And when this first started, they weren't writing the numbers correctly for San Carlos. They were for Guaymas. But like that auto help geolocation stuff was not writing them correctly. And so I had already done some international purchasing. So I had my office address in my American Prime, and I've just always used that for shipping. Now I think they've corrected the problem with San Carlos addresses. I think they write correctly. As you're filling out the address, it's offering help in how to write it. And it's got choices like sectors and city names that are right there in the address field.
We send it to our realtor.
I've got an Echo, and it's being charged against my American credit card, but it works here.
Yes. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with things like Prime. Like you're able to take advantage of Prime Music. You're able to listen to this collection of music that's made available to you because you're a Prime member.
Really?
But now they have Prime in Mexico. So what's going to happen to my Prime Music? Right now, I know that the music's coming to me is Prime U.S. It's not Prime Mexico.
Right.
Does Prime Mexico allow me to have access to the exact same collection? It's hard to imagine it does, just the way copyrights work.
You get a film selection as well.
That's right.
I haven't gone into it. I don't know what's
there. The film selection, when I first got Prime, was really bleak. It was like a half a dozen properties. Now it's really hard to tell the difference from the U.S. side of things.
Oh, really?
And without a doubt, Amazon's done a great job of producing shows. And so that whole collection, like Netflix, on the Mexican Netflix, that whole set of Amazon shows is available in Mexico because they are the copyright owner. Amazon is the copyright owner. And then the rest of their catalog is copyright relationships with those distributors. And so there's things like season 2 of some maybe available in the States. It's not available in Mexico yet. Okay. You might also have things where it's licensed to be available in Mexico with Spanish but not with English. Huh. Things like that exist still. But their catalog's gotten really big. I'd suggest going into it just to see what's available to you.
I can hardly ever find anything for free, though. I mean, I Love Lucy for $4 a episode. Ooh. I'm not going.
Well, to are you a Prime member?
Yeah.
In Mexico.
No.
Yeah. See,
no,
that.
I mean, in the States, it's the same thing.
Well, they've got a fairly extensive catalog now in the States too.
On YouTube. Yeah.
But I have Netflix. So.
Hey, on the topic of YouTube, did you see that they announced they're going to make all their premium stuff for free?
I saw that.
Yeah, they're YouTube Red. They're YouTube Red.
I haven't even delved into that yet.
They're going to. So they've got programs that they're developing specifically for their paid content. They're going to start releasing that for free alongside advertising, like their original business model.
Is YouTube, who runs YouTube?
It's Google.
What is?
Yeah, Google bought it a long time ago.
Netflix just took over one or two large movie studios. One's in Albuquerque, and I'm not sure what the other one is.
Man, I bet they are just scrambling right now because they are one of the biggest properties, but Disney has made it clear they're coming after them.
Right.
And Disney, it's amazing to look at what they're going to set. First of all, Disney bought Major League Baseball's content distribution platform, which in the industry is the best video distribution platform that exists.
They own ESPN.
Right.
Yeah.
And so they've got the best technology. They've got one of the best portfolios of copyrighted material. They can flip a switch and be direct competitors with Netflix the moment they decide to do it. Wow. They've got the scale. They are not going to fail at becoming a number two Netflix overnight. And then Netflix has to have already had their 5-year plan figured out by that point, or they're going to immediately topple Netflix. They've already pulled all their Disney content from Netflix.
Are you talking about YouTube and Disney?
I'm talking about Disney. Disney is going to be the next Netflix, and they've already got all the content, whereas Netflix had to struggle to get their content. Now they're struggling to hang on to it.
Well, is Disney a pay situation like Netflix?
Yeah, it'll be paid. It'll compete directly with Netflix for exactly the same customer, and they'll win. Right now, there's no way that they could lose.
They have more money.
That's questionable. Netflix has a lot of money. That's why they're buying music. That's why they're buying movie studios. Is what they need to do is they need to build their brand into something that can compete against a Disney, Marvel, Star Wars, TriStar, Touchstone. I mean, think of all these Miramax. I mean, all this huge
Pixel.
Back. Yeah, Pixel. Yeah. The it's not Pixel. It's a Pixar. Pixar. They have this huge back catalog of all these properties that we don't think of as Disney, but they're Disney. And then they've got ESPN. They've got ABC. All these content. And CBS has been trying to do the same thing. They've got CBS All Access. They've been producing content specifically for the online offering. It's been a bit of a joke because nobody's switching from Netflix to CBS online. They have nothing like what Disney's about to offer.
Yeah.
And Disney's going to offer this next year.
I've never been able to figure out why Disney did not buy an airline.
Didn't buy an airline?
Yeah. They've got cruise ships. I know they do, yeah.
I would imagine those are licensing agreements, yeah.
So you have Mickey Mouse serving you on the airplane.
I was watching CBS for the first time in a long time last night, and they had a deal on China. And talk about security, they have in all the cities, they have facial recognition and body recognition in all public spaces, not in private bedrooms, but in all public spaces, like a restaurant. And they have
I think the big news is they're starting to do this in Beijing. Is that right?
This is in all big cities.
Well, it was a testing program, but they've just recently brought it to Beijing, which is a huge city.
It's all public spaces, and so there is nothing in public that isn't photographed.
No, it's this whole social credit system that they've put into place.
So if you've done something wrong when you were 6 years old,
or you're shunning
they
people.
Have a record of it.
Yeah, well, I mean, the example that I've heard passed around on the internet is you jaywalk, where they got cameras, and so they take a picture of you jaywalking, and they've got facial recognition because everybody has facial recognition, so they identify you. And then what they do is they publicly ostracize you. They put you on a public screen that shows... that shows this guy's not following the norm, and they shame you into it, and they drop your social credit score. And then when you're out trying to borrow money or you're trying to find a job, they look up your but that's what's happening now. I mean, that's what Equifax is. I mean, it's just we base everything on our financial fluidity, whereas China is all on social fluidity.
Yeah.
right? So like if I go and try and apply for a job, they check my credit rating to see what kind of credit risk I am. And my Facebook and my Twitter, they're trying to find out if I'm a good hire. It's all China's doing, but they're not doing it from a capitalist standpoint, they're doing it from a communist standpoint.
Uber driver ratings are a similar technique.
Well, that's why Uber's so successful, is we never had a way to say this is a shitty taxi driver, you shouldn't get a ride from it. Whereas Uber, you can see that right from the get-go, well, we're not hiring him, look, nobody likes him. This guy's got mints.
Uber is profitable this year for $2.6 billion because of deals they made in China and Russia. But in addition to that, anybody can show a loss when they're growing. Even if you make, let's say, $100,000, and if you invest $300,000 in your business, you've basically got a $200,000. Well, they've always made money. They got too great a model. It's impossible.
No, they are suffering from a burn rate. A burn rate. And the burn rate is how quickly you run through cash before you can become profitable. And so, I mean, I imagine what Stanley's saying is true from a perspective. But from a venture capitalist perspective, it's like, how long can you hold out until you start making real money? Right? Well, it's a little frustrating because like I think Amazon's a great example. They're able to sell at a loss and drive local businesses out. And I think that's a genuine concern because it's fictitious. So you're getting a fictitious price. They have decided they've got so much money that they can give it to you at less money. I mean, like, they're taking a loss delivering you that product, but they want to wrap up. They want to have control of that market.
That's the American way.
Well, when all said and done, we're going to pay more for that product because they weren't able to get it at the price they gave it to you in the first place. And the only reason they've done it is to eliminate the competition in the same market share.
That's the way business is done. That's exactly what the company you mentioned, Disney. Disney is going to be in a price war.
Well, Stanley, you say that like that's a justification for doing something wrong, and it's not. I mean, just because we've always done it that way.
It's subjective. Business is competition. That's very subjective. What drives business, in a sense, is the efficiency that's required to be competitive. So you can look at it two ways.
Yeah,
they got to survive in the end.
I agree with you.
Yes, yeah. Sir. It's the same strategy that China used that we objected to.
That they could undercut.
They subsidize.
I think it's a good discussion. I do think that there is something wrong with when you're able to set a price lower until all the competition disappears and then raise the price back up.
Capitalism essentially is not a just system. It's a successful system in terms of money, but it's not just socially unjust. That's what's underlying what you're saying. But in reality, look at how Americans live and other capitalistic societies compared to those like communist ones. It's a better life, so people gravitate towards it.
It is a better life.
Well, yeah, that's probably you could probably argue that as well. I mean, we have quite a large gap of inequality that didn't exist 20 years ago. So we've got more people suffering from less economic ability in the United States than we had in the past. This is the first generation that's going to leave the United States, leave their children in worse shape than their parents left them.
Some food for thought. I read a very, very interesting article about a month ago that kind of blew my mind. And it says, who is the 1% we're talking about that's got all the wealth? They say, who's the 1%? Because you hear this all the time. 1% has 99% of the wealth in the world, right? You know who the 1% turns out to be? Us. Believe it or not, the 1%, the number that they have analyzed to be the 1% is a net worth of $900,000+. $900,000+.
Well, that's not me.
It's hundreds of thousands of people. All of California, all of San Francisco right now, I think, every house is worth a million or more. I read this recently. That's the mean price of a house in San Francisco. So everyone in San Francisco is part of the 1%. I can guarantee 10% of San Carlos lives in that.
But
if they have a home in the United States, they have a home. That includes homes and all their work, including beds and breakfasts or anything else that might be included in this thing. Believe it or not, while we denigrate the 1% as the injustice of the world, we might be the guilty ones.
But there's the question, who is richer, a Chinese person or an American? And the answer is, well, the Chinese person has no debt and $500 in the bank, and the American has $1 million in debt if they own a house, or just $30,000 in revolving credit.
Yeah, I disagree with you, Stanley. I think if I own a piece of property that gets...
Stanley's not a bad guy to disagree.
Oh, I'm sorry. Irving.
Okay.
Irving.
No, it's okay.
No, I just have
yeah. Irving. Of course it's Irving. Of course it's Irving.
I'm wrong.
I think that if you have a piece of property, if you have a piece of property and the government comes out and reassesses it at a higher value based on the property values around because people are spending so much on those properties, me as a property owner get burdened with a higher tax debt that I may not be ready to pay. And if I'm not ready to pay, then I have to be ready to sell.
That's exactly what happened.
Right, and that's not right.
But look at how it affects you. You're selling at a much higher price than its true value.
Not necessarily.
So, wait, now that's...
Generally speaking.
Value ends up being intrinsic. No. And what if I've got kids, I'm putting them through school and college, I can't even begin to think about a new house and a new place to live simply because all these rich morons moved in around me.
Well, because that's the market. You can't change the market.
Washingtonians and
market doesn't move by logic
in California,
especially like the stock market.
I'm just saying, when you say that each house is worth $1 million, I'm saying that's contrived.
It's by sales. It's by sales. Listen,
supply.
You got to find somebody that's going to pay me $1 million for my house.
You live in San Francisco?
No. No, I couldn't afford to live in San Francisco,
but that's the point.
Let alone raise a family there.
But
listen, that's the point. That's the point.
But that's why Washingtonians and Oregonians don't like Californians, because all these Californians are moving up here and raising the property value, but they're not really Californians. They were born in Illinois, and they came to California, working in aerospace, and now they're retired and going to Washington.
They're doing it in
a day. What do you mean?
All the Californians are going to work for 1 year.
And
they rained all the time, and they all moved back to California.
And they raised the prices to a tremendous value.
$13,000
a year.
Yeah, I got to shut down this club meeting. Let me announce that. This has been the San Carlos Computer Club. We meet every Tuesday from 9:15 to 10:15-ish, and obviously we talk about all kinds of topics. If you're interested in any of this, outside of this week, you could probably find us at sccclub.org. Hopefully that will be fixed by the end of the day, but I'm not making any promises. If you have computer issues and are looking for help anywhere on the internet, you can get a hold of me at internationalcs.net or write me email scott@internationalcs.net. You can look for the San Carlos Computer Club in places like the iTunes store. Just search for the San Carlos Computer Club or anywhere you get your podcasts. We're also on YouTube. I've got an address for the YouTube videos now. Just go to youtube.sccclub.org. It'll take you to the YouTube channel. I guess that's it for this week. Tech on. We'll see you next Tuesday.
You all missed it. The one thing that China is doing with this facial recognition, and from birth until death, they have a record of everything, is that there is no forgiveness.
It was me.
And that is